Hey, my name's Rob Warwick, and I'm an editor on AfroFitter. You're listening to an interview at the Hackers on Planet Earth Conference in New York City, where Kevin Mitnick has agreed to be interviewed by us on fairly short notice. Thanks for taking time to be here with us, Kevin.
Oh, no problem, Rob. It's great to be here.
First off, we're going to start with a bit of the background information on Kevin. He's been portrayed as a dark side hacker by much of the media and did manage to commit a fair number of crimes in the past using a combination of social engineering and technical exploits. After a long struggle, Kevin's back among us, able to use the internet again for over a year now. He runs his own security consulting company, Defensive Thinking, and provided that the people employing him are smart enough to listen, he's doing more than his bit to help us secure our systems against all kinds of attacks. If you're interested in learning more about Kevin, you can find a recording of his keynote here at Hope on AfroFitter, or you can check out his book, The Art of Deception. Also recently released on DVD is a 2600 documentary, Freedom Downtime. But let's get down to some questions here. Kevin, you've been referred to as everything from an untalented wannabe to one of the most brilliant hackers around. In your interviews with other sources, you tell us that you didn't just use social engineering, but also used a fair amount of technical exploits derived from a deep understanding of how the code actually worked. What would you say was more effective in helping you enter a system, social engineering or sheer technical know-how?
That was actually both. I would use different techniques depending on what would be most expedient. For example, if I were to hack into a company like Motorola and I could find a technical vulnerability to get into their internal network and then use a social engineering attack to find out where the information is actually stored, so I wouldn't have to figure out which computer system to go ahead and attack, well, that's using kind of like a blended attack. I don't know if that's a good example, but it was the technique used was usually blended, and it usually depended on what was most expedient at the time to accomplish the goal that I decided to go after.
So basically the most direct route to the problem.
Exactly. Like in one company, I found a vulnerability in one of the Linux boxes that was on their gateway, pretty much on their border. And that was a technical exploit that I used to breach that part of the internal network. And then I was looking for something in particular, a particular type and version of source code. And because this company was a worldwide company, it had literally tens of thousands of servers, I used a social engineering attack to find out which box the code that I was interested in resided on.
Okay, and was that the VMS source code one?
No, the VMS was done pretty much technical.
Okay.
There was an attack on DEC before when I was a teenager in high school, but that was on the RISC-V development system, which was a lot different than the VMS.
Okay. Let's see, what would you say the ratio of social engineering to technical exploits was when you were doing your unauthorized hacking there?
Into the phone company, social engineering probably was 60 to 70%. Into other types of systems, companies that developed operating systems, cellular phone manufacturers, and others was pretty much, I'd say, 50-50.
So you used more social engineering tactics on companies that had the larger human resource front-end types?
Well, it really depended on how I was, you know, looking at the attack. If I didn't find, for example, when I would analyze, you know, I'd find the company's net blocks, I'd find out what systems are exposed to the internet, I'd find out, don't forget, I did this stuff 10 years ago, a lot of stuff was dial-up. And because of my knowledge of the phone company, because I started as a phone freaker, I was able to get internal dial-up numbers that would be considered, you know, they use the theory of security through obscurity. But since the number was secret, nobody else can get it. So a lot of times I'd use my phone freaking prowess to attack a box. For example, if the system had a dial-up and I were to dial in and get like a system prompt, what I can do through the phone company is get access to the switch, call for that number, the pilot number, the first number, if it's a hunt group, to another decoy box that would simulate the real system. So I'd be able to, so when somebody else dialed in, an authorized user, they'd be providing me their login credentials. Okay, so let's say I got through that one, through that technical way, and let's say there was a particular target I was going after. Then, see, it wasn't like I would pre-plan every step of the attack. I'd go to a particular step, look at what the quickest way in, and in the shortest amount of time, of course, and take the easiest route. You know, and if it was a social engineering attack, great. If it was doing something technical, great. It really didn't matter.
Did you have one that you liked to do more, one that was more fun or easier?
Well, I found that social engineering was so effective that, and I'm not talking about social engineering where you talk somebody out of their password. That's a big red flag. But I mean, finding out bits and pieces of information from people all over the company or all over the enterprise, and basically taking that information as the sum of intelligence and using that to further my attack. It could be as simple as knowing their operating system platform, knowing their patch level, what new installs they have, what applications. Because a social engineering attack could be tricking the target by masquerading as the vendor and sending in a software update physically on CD-ROM, on tape. And since you are tricking a human being into doing some sort of action, albeit installing a piece of software, that is social engineering.
Okay, great. Let's see, just to swap topics a little bit, you've told other sources that there's really no way to actually completely stop social engineering attacks from being completely effective. What can a company do to minimize the risk of social engineering attacks? Should we be spending as much of not making more money securing against those?
Well, I believe.
Yeah, do we ignore those a whole lot? Or?
No, you don't ignore it. Your security program is, you got to look at all your components. If you spend your security budget in one area, say it's technology, and you don't look at the other areas where you might have vulnerability, then the attacker is going to go after the weakest link in the security chain. They're going to look for the crack in the wall. Okay, any good attacker. So what you have to do is spend your security budget on looking at your processes, on your technology, and on your people, and on the management process that manages all those components. And I think, in my experience, because social engineering has been effective in a lot of my attacks, is that there must be a education and training or security awareness program that helps people identify or distinguish between what is a legitimate request made by a coworker, made by a manager, or what is a manipulative request. And giving examples of different methodologies, tactics, and strategies that social engineers use through example, and by helping people identify what red flags and yellow flags are out there. One type of social engineering that's extremely effective is not through deception and, you know, just outright lying. It's through using influence tactics, tactics of reciprocity, authority, and scarcity to push the right psychological buttons to get that target to comply with the request.
So sometimes it's just kind of scaring the person into doing what you want them to.
No, that's more basically, that's an attack based on fear, maybe on what we call retribution theory, is based on reward and punishment. Now this is, for example, or I'll give you an example of a reciprocity attack. This is where we, all humans, of all human races and social groups, learn from a very young age that when somebody does something for you, you reply in like kind, okay? So as I scratch your back, you scratch mine. So knowing how that influence tactic works, a sophisticated social engineer could frame the attack where they do a favor for the target. The target just has to perceive it as a favor. It doesn't even have to be a real favor. And then once that favor is complete, then the attacker asks the target for a favor. For example, if a bad guy calls random telephone numbers within a large company, and says, oh, hey, I'm with the IT department, or I'm with the help desk, and I'm following up on a computer problem you reported. Probably in 4 out of 10 calls, 40% chance of finding somebody that reported a problem, probably within 10 calls, right? So you get a 4, you're usually going to find 4 people out of 10. So then, pretending to be in that position of the help desk person or the technician, you help the problem person solve that problem. Let's say it's even configuring something as basic as Microsoft's Outlook client. Then once you help that person accomplish, you know, to solve their problem, then you say, oh, by the way, now that I helped you do this and now it's working, I need you to do this for me. And they'll usually go ahead and comply because of the reciprocity influence tactic, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, yeah, that completely makes sense. So basically you're saying that you go ahead, you do something for them, you help them out a little bit, and you say, and could you just help me out a little bit here too?
Right, but you do it in a very elegant way. Right, and it's in a way that where the request, where you're coming in, you're perceived as doing the target a favor, and then you're asking for some minor favor in return, be it to, hey, to make sure this problem with Outlook doesn't occur again, I need you to drop to a DOS shell and type this command. And of course, the attacker, the first thing they're going to do is try to read the person to kind of get a little bit of insight into their technical know-how. So if the person is a technical white belt or somebody that doesn't have that much technical experience, then the person can probably be tricked into typing in a command to share their hard drive, for example, and they don't know the consequences of doing that action.
Okay, that's interesting there. What kind of people working for a company would you say are the biggest risk to social perceived risk to social engineering, I'd say? People who don't expect to last on the job more than a few months, so they're kind of lax about it, or people who have been there for quite a while and just skip steps to make it go faster?
Well, everyone's really susceptible to being a target, especially people that operate under the illusion of invulnerability, that they're too smart, they're not gullible, and they can't be tricked. But it's usually the attacker. How they look at solving the problem is they try to target the person in the company, in the educational institution, in the government agency that has access to the information that the attacker wants and has the least appreciation for it. In other words, they don't work with that information every day. They don't know the sensitivity of that information, so they're more likely to reveal that information, if that makes sense to you.
So, for example, you mentioned in your keynote the Motorola source code that you got from that. The person that helped you there didn't necessarily really know what it was.
No, she knew what it was because she was a developer, but in that case, it was basically she perceived me to be working with her boss and perceived me to be another engineer in a sister facility, okay, which had nothing with what I was trying to describe.
Yeah.
In that case, let's say we haven't discussed the Motorola attack here, but if they go and listen to the keynote,
available on our site as well.
Right. So. Another effective social engineering attack could have been is to target somebody like the person that's responsible for doing computer backups, somebody like a computer operator whose job is basically low paid, low responsibility. And then trying to deceive that person into, for example, providing a tar/gzip file of the whole hard drive, for example, or of a whole entire directory, because that person doesn't work directly with the source code tree for the firmware software.
Okay. Over a year ago, Slashdot Publisher commented that without your experiences earlier in life, you'd probably be just another unrecognized hacker or technician going through life. Do you consider your success to be a direct result of the publicity resolving your imprisonment, or do you think you'd achieve the same results if you'd never been caught?
Well, first of all, with Slashdot, there's a lot of trollers out there that don't know me personally. You got all these trollers out there that like to talk smack about me that. And I just laugh about it because these guys that do this are probably jealous and probably have nothing going on in their life. But in any event, it is true that if I wasn't made the hacker poster boy by the U.S. government, then I wasn't kind of the New York Times martyr, or I was libeled by the New York Times when John Markoff wrote a number of stories. That basically had I wouldn't even call it inaccurate. Well, intentionally false statements put in there that I had done these
unverified
things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, unverified, but obviously reasonable person would have actually suspected it not to be true.
Right. And you described that a little bit more in your keynote.
Yeah, like breaking into NORAD from the movie War Games. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. So in any event, if I wasn't given the profile in the New York Times, if I hadn't been made the government's poster boy, a lot of people wouldn't have known my name, okay? And I wouldn't have had the notoriety surrounding my name, but at the same time, I'm good at what I do. Like right now, I do vulnerability assessments, I do pen testing, I'm an author, I'm a consultant, and I would have done very well regardless of my background, but I don't think my name would have been that well known.
The skills would have been the same. You just wouldn't have maybe had as much free publicity and stuff.
No,
like this.
Well, exactly. I wouldn't have been a household name. I mean, it's just common sense, right? Now, unless I, put my hacking skills to some use, that would have got some legitimate publicity. But I can't think of any security person that has done so. in time. Maybe Dan Farber and Vanessa Venema back in the 80s when they released Satan and it made the news, right? And they and of course they were releasing a tool that could be used for good or bad. So, you know, but usually Dan Farmer and Whitson Venema are not household names. They're only known to the small information security community. So I don't know of anybody out there that's a household name that is for hacking that is well known. You know, pretty much everyone that's well known has been in some trouble with the law. Robert Morris, myself, Kevin Polson, Adrian Lamo, and several others.
Well, regardless of that, you are well known and you have inspired a lot of people because of that. Did you have any heroes that were inspiring you? I know you mentioned in your keynote that you were trying to be accepted by a group of guys. By a group of guys doing some of your hacking earlier on.
Right, when I was basically a phone freak and I didn't know much about computers and I respected these guys' skills and I wanted to learn as much as they did. I wanted to be able to pick their brain and be accepted so they would be sharing information, a community of sharing. And I didn't have those guys weren't my heroes in any respect. The people that I actually looked up to when I was a phone freak was really people like Steve Wozniak and John Draper. Which is kind of funny because now I socialize with at least Steve these days, and I see John at a lot of the conventions. So, but as far as people in the computer, I guess the computer pioneers or the telephone freakers of yesterday, those were the two guys that I looked up to.
Okay, and you know, I've never actually heard this question asked to you before. So, have you ever been at the receiving end of a social engineering attack? And if you have, was it successful?
Yeah, it was successful. About a year ago, I was in Washington, D.C., because I was fighting to get my ham radio license back, because the FCC wanted to yank it because I didn't meet their quote-unquote character qualifications because of my hacking. So when I was in D.C., I get this call in my private cell phone number. The guy on the other end of the line identifies himself as an AP reporter. And then he told me that he got my private cell phone number from my publisher at John Wiley & Sons about my new and upcoming book, The Art of Deception, that was going to be released in October of 2002. So the call was probably in June or July of 2002. So we're talking about a couple years ago. And he told me that he spoke to Wiley and they wanted me to conduct an interview with him today in the pre-publicity for my book. So I asked him, I go, well, who did you speak to? And he gave me the name of somebody I knew at Wiley. And because I was distracted and I was, you know, concentrating on other important things that I was in Washington, D.C. for, I basically took the guy's word for it and I granted him an interview. And about a week later, it did run on the Associated Press, so he was a reporter. But I received a call from the publisher asking me why did I interview with him, that they already told him on several occasions that they don't want me to talk to him until it got closer to the publication date of the book. So all I did is have a smile to myself and go, ah, I was socially engineered, right?
Well, hey, as long as you can take it with a bit of a light heart there.
Yeah.
Rachel, so thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule here to speak with us on such short notice. Kevin, and have a good night here.
All right. Well, hope the interview was informative, and you have a great night, too, and I hope you enjoy the conference.
Great. Thank you.
Bye. All right.